locations for our paid video production fellowships. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Phelps, Nirmin Shah, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Trina Ndura, Nat Needham, and Libby Rennie. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
Join KBOO and Kofallen Cultural Center on Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for an evening of storytelling, live music, and film. Malian artist, author, and storyteller Baba Wage Jakite starts with a talk on the background of the Empire of Mali and the role of West Africa's oral historians before the screening of Keita, Heritage of the Griots, a film which blends modern events with magical realism, mythology, and history. Again, that's an evening of the culture of Mali, including the screening of the film Keita, Heritage of the Griots, on Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Come ride and dance with Diablo all over Portland as we celebrate Prince's birthday on Thursday, June 7th at 8 p.m. with a mobile bicycle dance party. We'll be rocking Pedalpalooza and dropping the Prince jams all night long with frequent dance stops. Once again, that's Prince's birthday bike ride celebration, Thursday, June 7th at 8 p.m. More information on the KBOO website under Community Events.
This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from Indigo Gardens, specializing in growing bee-friendly flowers and inspired seasonal floral design. Located in East Portland, it's Indigo Gardens. For more information, the number is 503-421-1435 or go to indigogardenspdx.com.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, this is KVOO 90.7.
Yes, I'm Abe and you are Joe.
I am Joe.
By extension, this is the Abe and Joe show. See how that works?
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, do we have a grab bag of fun for you today.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yes. But first, you wanted to take brief note of this day in history. Did you?
Yeah. This is the day democracy died. For real. This is the day that Robert Kennedy was murdered in 1968. Got his brains blown out, quite literally.
Democracy has been dead all this time.
Well, yeah. I mean, functionally, yeah. Hmm. No, I really believe that. And I can see how it has happened. We've elected kind of liberals and we've elected kind of conservatives. Mm-hmm. But the whole process of governance in a responsible way has disappeared. And that, I think, has got a lot to do with the enormous discontinuity that assassination beginning in the 60s created.
Yeah, indeed. After a while, it became clear that if you were a prominent liberal in this country, you might end up dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and, you know, things go on that are very creepy, even here on KBOO. We apparently were sabotaged.
Yeah, I wanted to make a brief mention of that. KBOO's website was the target of a malicious attack several weeks ago. This had nothing to do with any political opinions that were espoused here. It was an attempt to mine cryptocurrency.
What the hell is that?
Well, you know what cryptocurrency is, right? Most people know what that is. Bitcoin and it's...
Yeah, all that bull.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know anything about how you mine it or how you take advantage of other people's resources to do so, but that's what happened. And we're really still kind of dealing with the fallout, and that's why I have not been able to post online promos for this show for a few weeks running now.
Well, when do we get clear of this?
I think we're nearly there.
Really?
Yeah, that was the
That's what
the
they say.
That's what they say, yes. So those of you who may have missed those in your various social media timelines and on the cable website, my apologies. Hopefully we'll be able to do that again soon.
And the number to call here for this talk radio show is 231-8187.
Well, yeah, with a 503 in front. 231.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody knows about the 503. It's all a thing.
Okay.
Imposed by the telephone company back in the good old days when it was a singular monopoly.
Yeah. Oh, those were the days.
Oh, yeah.
The warm embrace of Ma Bell.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So this happened the other day in the United States, actually just yesterday, a day which will go down in infamy as the day in which an American president declared himself above the law.
Yes, the autocratic leader.
The autocratic leader. Now, it's easy to sort of laugh because he's such an absurd figure, our president.
Well, really, stupid, really. Narcissistic.
Has there ever been more of a walking caricature in the White House? I don't know.
Well, we don't know because, you know, we didn't know all those 1,800 people.
Which 1,800 people?
Those people.
Oh, those. Them. Okay. All right. I don't know what you're talking about, but all right. Let's let that go. So here's what the president tweeted. As has been stated by numerous legal scholars, I have the absolute right to pardon myself. But why would I do that when I've done nothing wrong? In the meantime, the never-ending witch hunt, led by 13 very angry and conflicted Democrats and others, continues into the midterms. Let me say that one more time. Because, really, however absurd this president is, every American should be queasy way down deep when they hear these words. I have the absolute right to pardon myself. In other words, the law applies to everyone but him.
And we have Giuliani making weird supportive comments.
Yes. Yes, weird supportive. Well, sort of. Giuliani said, he's not going to pardon himself because he did. If he did, he would probably be immediately impeached. But I'm here to tell you, I don't think he would be immediately impeached. I think it's even worse odds than a coin flip. I think it's more likely that he would remain in office if he were to pardon himself for an alleged crime.
Well, you know, the Republican Party has, over the years, particularly in more recent times, become more and more a foul fascist party.
Yeah, oh, it's true.
So I no longer have a touting of the notion of two relatively conservative, one liberal, one really conservative party arguing for things. I rather think that what we have is an autocratic party, which is in denial and lies a lot, and the other, which is also in denial, but lies less.
Yeah, indeed. If we go with the definition of fascism as laid out by the man who invented the word fascism, Benito Mussolini.
Yes, who is imitated by Trump consciously.
Yeah, people always draw parallels between Trump and Hitler, but I think he's much more of a Mussolini figure.
Oh, absolutely.
Hitler.
With the arm gestures.
Oh, and the way he sticks his chin out.
And his big stomach gets stuck out too.
Yeah, indeed. We could go on and on, but I think you get the idea. Yeah. Mussolini said that fascism... it's more accurately described as corporatism because it represents the perfect union of the corporation and the state. In other words, the state and the corporate sector essentially being indistinguishable from one another and existing to serve and enrich one another.
We definitely got that.
Yes, indeed. So if you look back over recent American history, and by recent I mean back to about the Reagan administration, you can see the beginnings of this trend, right? The beginnings of this creation of this uber-wealthy ruling elite.
Well, I think it goes back before that, but you're right, essentially.
It does. When this ruling elite regained the ascendancy that it had been denied during the post-war years by the post-war liberal consensus.
Which was, by the way, essentially conservative because it was highly anti-communist and highly anti-left. And there was the draconian McCarthy era, too.
Well, highly anti-left with the exception of things like Social Security and the New Deal programs and the Great Society and all those things.
Yes. Yep. Well.
Yeah. Those
accommodations to the hungry.
Right. Those were liberal policy decisions.
Yes.
as imperfect as they may have been. Anyway, so that we begin to see this ruling elite reassert itself after the Reagan years, essentially saw intervening Democratic administrations only beginning, maybe fighting a holding action against this, and in their own way contributing to the continued enrichment of this emerging ruling class. I don't think you can argue convincingly that the Bill Clinton administration halted that in any way. I don't think you can argue very convincingly that the Barack Obama administration did either, although there was an effort made under Obama to move us back towards something like the post-war consensus.
Yeah, and I think that it's, in the case of Obama, he was a liberal, but not really a leftist liberal, and he never had a fighting chance because the Republicans made a decision basically more racist than political, not to let him get anywhere with any positive programs.
Right. And also Obama made the decision to not hold the capitalist responsible for tanking the world economy in 2008.
Right.
Right. So you can see this playing out over the past several decades. But it's hard not to be surprised and aghast at just how quickly we have slid under President Trump to the point now where we have a president via social media, of all the absurd ways that a president might declare his absolute power, he did it with a tweet. But there we are. Every American should be breaking out in a cold sweat over this.
Well, but here's the thing: you have a large population of people who are aware and are concerned, who are not necessarily moved to action, but there is concern. Meanwhile, there is what used to be the Republican Party, which has turned into some weird Trumpist party united behind a crazy man because it helps them keep power, and they seem absolutely indifferent to anything but the wealthy and anything but Trump.
Yeah.
So it's really bad, really bad. And I don't see a solution to that. We got the Russians meddling in our elections. We got vast sources of money poured into the Republican Party. You know?
Yeah, indeed. And we have a president who daily lies to his constituency about everything under the sun, who has been engaged in criminal activity since before he took office, and who has been a walking violation of the Emoluments Clause since the moment he took the oath of office.
Well, it's quite amazing. And, you know, he also has a bad, very bad short-term memory. He said, I think it was yesterday, or the day before, that he got this big envelope from the North Koreans, and we would be so surprised at what was in it. It was all wonderful. And then about 5-10 minutes later, he was asked about it, and he said he hadn't opened the envelope.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's like that old Johnny Carson character, Karnak the Magnificent.
All right.
He holds the envelope up to his turban.
Yes.
And then
exactly.
But I don't think so. I think he's just dumb.
Well, I think he actually has... This is important because it's really scary. A strange sort of, I don't know the name of the disease, but it's a brain failing. Short-term memory gone. Long-term memory not accurate.
And do you think this is just kind of the blunting of mental acuity that happens as people age?
No, I'm old. I ain't got no mental acuity blumping. I beg your pardon.
You know what I'm talking about, right? There's a spectrum. You're sharp.
Well, I do have short-term memory loss. What? Where am I? Why? Why am I here?
You're at the doctor's, Joe.
Okay.
Well, you know what I'm saying. There's a spectrum running from, you know, full-blown dementia to people just getting a little forgetful as they get old, right?
Right. Leaving the stove on. And the fire that ensues.
But you think this is inching towards the more serious end of that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, man lives on Burger King, so.
All right. So there's that. The president declaring that he has absolute power.
Right.
Let's leave that out on the table for discussion. Also, Paul Manafort. Remember Paul Manafort?
Paul Manafort!
Former chief of Trump's campaign. The first indicted under the Mueller investigation. Now, let's just for those of you keeping score at home, Mueller was indicted for illegal lobbying activity on
Manafort.
Manafort.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Mueller.
Oh, sorry. Manafort.
Short-term memory, man.
Wow. Manafort was indicted for illegal lobbying activity on behalf of the pro-Russian former president of the Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych.
Who could forget Vic?
Well, I think a lot of people probably have.
Remember all that documents dumped in the lake and got recovered, and it was fun.
Yeah, and the weird radioactive poisoning of his opponent.
Right, and the Russians attempting to take Ukraine back with the armed forces.
Well, the Russians actually annexing a big chunk of Ukraine.
Right.
And
the port.
Right. And this was an actual land grab on the European continent, I think, for the first time since the end of the war. I could be wrong about that, but
I think
it's true.
I have to think about it.
Anyway, I digress. Manafort was indicted for illegally lobbying on behalf of Yanukovych.
Yeah.
He pleaded guilty to those charges. More charges were later added, saying he committed fraud in attempting to... Because after Yanukovych was deposed, Manafort's income stream dried up.
Right.
So then he lied to banks in some attempts to get loans that were secured by properties he owned. Apparently he inflated their worth quite a bit in seeking these loans. So he's been indicted for both fraud and for illegal lobbying. Okay, we got that out there, right?
Yeah.
It was revealed yesterday by the Mueller investigation that Manafort tried to tamper with material witnesses in his case.
Yeah, there's no question about it.
Right. I'm no lawyer, but I'm guessing witness tampering is bad.
Well, I'm no lawyer, but I play one on the radio.
Witness tampering is bad.
Yes.
Okay, so we've got that. Then we've also got Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, who 2 days ago went to a border detention facility in Brownsville, Texas.
Yes.
To try to gain admission to see how the children being held there were being treated. He went to a Walmart that has been turned into a detention warehouse.
A giant cage.
The doors were blocked out. And he was denied admission and escorted off the property.
And they in the press releases said, claiming to be a senator.
Yeah. Yeah, someone claiming to be a U.S. senator.
Right.
Now, usually I think dropping the line, I am U.S. Senator so-and-so, is enough to get most doors to open for you most places in the United
States.
Not at a U.S. government detention facility in Brownsville, Texas, it appears.
I think run by private security.
I don't know about that.
Pretty sure.
Okay. Later, Merkley gained access to a different facility in southern Texas, in which he claims to have seen children who had been separated from their parents housed in cages.
Without mattresses and with only those plastic warm, what do you call it, thin blanket things wear, that they give you after you've half frozen.
Survival blankets, whatever
survival
you call
blanket,
them.
Whatever.
So I'll let that sink in for a moment. The United States government is separating children from their parents at the border of this country and housing children in cages.
And I want to make a point about that. It isn't just a cruelty to mothers. It is wrong on several levels. Number one, the children committed no crime. So they're being punished for, if you want to call it a crime, the sins of their parents. More important than that, there is ample evidence in the literature of psychology and child rearing, child development, that separating children when they're young from their parents is a crucial factor in messing children up for life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know.
And I challenge anyone listening to this program right now to react in any way but with visceral horror at that. This is something every human being grasps at a very deep level, down in your guts, that it is not okay to take children, separate them from their parents, and put them in a cage.
Well, just beginning with the fundamental fact that children could not have committed a crime.
No.
And the fact that it is a punishing activity with enormous implications. If you've ever had a kitty cat separated from its mommy too young, you can see that there's neurosis even in that animal.
Yeah. So this is what we have. This is what we have before us right now. You know, this is what we voted for, because apparently Hillary's emails were just a bridge too far and we couldn't tolerate that sort of thing.
Well, we also have not yet fully comprehended the interference of Russia, the Putin Russia, in our electoral process, which is going to happen again in 18.
Yeah, but I want to say right now that Joe and I, and I'm going to speak for you for a moment here, if I may, we're not blaming Trump's election on the Russians.
No.
The interference of the Russians in the 2016 elections was one of many factors that contributed to Trump's eventual electoral victory. Okay?
Well, I'll agree with that, except we don't know the extent of that, so I'm never sure.
Okay. And finally, the icing on our fascist sandwich this fine Tuesday morning.
A fascist sandwich with icing?
Yes.
Okay.
we actually had two groups of people here in Portland 2 days ago doing battle in the streets. A group of anti-fascists, the Antifa. I don't know how to pronounce that word.
Antifa. Maybe,
Antifa. Okay. Antifa versus, I guess, the FA, a group called...
the FA!
A group called Patriot Prayer. And if you think about that name for a minute, I think that tells you everything you need to know. Fought each other in the streets of Portland. Four people were arrested.
Well, how big a crowd on each side, do we know?
I really don't know. It says in the Oregonian, hundreds. The rallies drew hundreds. There were two opposing rallies going on.
Well, this is so reminiscent for me of the pre-Nazi era of the street fights that took place in cities like Berlin and Frankfurt.
Yeah. But it's astonishing how quickly we have slid to this point.
Slid. Okay.
Slid, I don't know.
Flat.
Since Trump was inaugurated. That was just a little more than a year ago. Let's remember.
Yes.
If you're not being kept up at night by this, I submit to you, you're not paying close enough attention and you're not doing enough about it.
Well, the seeds of all this, the reason why I talked about the murder of Bobby Kennedy is that the seeds of all of this during the great period of the horrible period of assassinations in the 60s really did set the stage for what has been happening steadily since that time, with some efforts at reform usually failing.
Yeah. So what we're looking at now is what I think you can interpret all of Trump's presidency so far as a constitutional crisis in slow motion. But we see things accelerating right now. I mentioned at the outset that he has declared himself above the law, that he has the absolute right, that's his words, to pardon himself. Now, it also is prevailing legal opinion that a sitting president cannot be indicted for a crime. So even if the Mueller investigation wants to bring charges against the president, it's not clear that they can do so. It is clear, based on precedent set during the Nixon administration, that a president must answer a subpoena. So if Trump is called upon to either hand over evidence or to testify, that he must do so. Whether he will agree to do so is an open question at this point. So then, as we're the remedy at this point for his misbehavior, as it has been since he was inaugurated, is impeachment, as spelled out in the Constitution. But as we've mentioned many times on this show, that depends on the moral rectitude of the House Republicans. And I have zero confidence that they will do so, even if Trump were to come out and pardon himself proactively against whatever crimes he may be accused of.
Remember, when he was running, he said he was so popular he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and have no consequence.
Right. That suddenly seems quite a bit more real, doesn't it?
Well, suddenly I'm thinking, my God.
It could be true.
A little private army, maybe?
Yeah, because he's declared himself above the law, and his enablers in Congress might just make it so. He might refuse to testify, which is in itself an impeachable offense. And he will likely, if I were a betting man, I would bet that no, Congress is not going to impeach him if he refuses to testify.
Well, and I want to add some praise for Merkley. Jeff Merkley really is trying to break open and make Americans realize the horror of putting children in giant warehouses separated from their parents when they, the children, have absolutely no role in committing a crime.
Caged like animals or subhumans.
Right.
Yeah. I'm trying really hard not to break into a profanity-laced tirade here. Maybe
you better
we should
not.
Go to the phones.
We better not. Let's go to the phones.
All right.
I want to do the number. Wait. All right. I want to do the number. It's 231-8187. Okay.
Norm, good morning. Norm, you're on the air.
Oh, I thought I was number two in the queue.
Congratulations, Norm. You win the prize.
You've jumped the queue. Go ahead.
I've jumped the queue. Yay. Hey. This is going to sound so weird, but lately I've been feeling a little bit of nostalgia for that other idiot in chief, George W. Bush, and I never, ever, ever thought I would feel.
Yeah, those were
that.
The days, right?
Boy, they may have been wrong, and they may have been wrong-handed, they may have engaged in conspiracies, but boy, they were within the law.
Well, maybe.
Sort of.
Yeah, kind of, sort of, yeah, you know, in the strictest sense of a legal word, and I'm committed to looking upon this moron as a source of you know, derisive, see, I told you so, Schadenfreude, laughter that we as progressives, you know, let this happen. I blame us.
Why us? Why me?
Us, not you.
No, I'm saying why would you want to acknowledge to create the idea that we are all not only helpless, which is my point, but beyond that, that there isn't this vast, and I think it's authentically the case, conspiracy against democracy.
You know, it's happening under our noses, and it's been happening under our noses for decades.
Well, that's true.
And you know, I'm just gonna end there and let somebody else have their say.
Okay.
I appreciate what you guys do and what you say. You are must hear radio for me. And yeah.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go on to the next
and tell
caller.
Your friends. All right, George is next. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Well, right. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine, thank you. Earlier, one of you said the Russians made a land grab in Eastern Europe, or
Crimea,
Crimea,
and parts of the rest of Ukraine. Yeah.
But remember, all that was part of the Soviet Union just a few years ago.
Yeah, that's. I was sort of worrying about that, and then I remembered having read somewhere, and I finally found it, but that NATO. The spokesperson for NATO, maybe the U.S. president, at one point said that if a deal could be worked out between the Soviet Union and the U.S., that the U.S. would not by any means expand any farther east, or that NATO would not expand any farther east. And so I think it was Gorbachev, you may remember this, said something like, well, okay, what is it you want? And the U.S. or NATO said, well, we want to incorporate just one more bit of territory. And I think it was Gorbachev said, well, okay. But not too long after that, and then I noticed there's a book on it, or I have one that says, NATO began to expand and continued despite the promise given, just a verbal promise.
Well, that's true. Absolutely true. And in fact, NATO is now actively involved in Poland and in all of the old former Eastern Bloc countries, which is by any interpretation reasonably perceived by the Russians as aggression.
Yeah, and I just thought you put your finger right on it, and
are you defending Russia's land grab in Ukraine?
You know, I would say that's a matter for debate. What you said, I think, is right on, that it had been previously part of the Soviet Union, and it's a heck of a strategically important area for the Soviet military, especially their navy, I guess.
Yeah, there's also lots of nice resorts on the
Crimea. Well, and remember, too, that this is the center of a war in the 1800s, the Crimean War, so it really has a historic significance for the West and the European East. Hmm. But I want to be clear about this. The seizure of that territory by Russia, even though it was previously part of the Soviet Union, is not okay. And in general, the behavior of Russia now is not okay. This is a kleptocracy. This is a system of governance by a very powerful small number of very wealthy people. And it is so far from democracy that even our flimsy notions pale by comparison.
Well, I just want to thank you because, you know, I couldn't have put it together that well. But thank you so much. I'll get off. I want to listen to the program now.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the call. All right, let's go to Dave.
Hey.
Hey.
How you guys doing?
Yeah,
pretty good.
But better. Go ahead.
I've got something that is really good. There's a ballot measure that we're collecting signatures for that begins to turn around the whole Trump era.
What you got, Dave?
Portland Clean Energy Fund. And that .com is the website.
PortlandCleanEnergyFund.com.
PortlandCleanEnergyFund.com. Okay. Yeah. And what it does is it raises $30 million a year to weatherize and solarize all our houses and apartments and buildings. And the way it does it, it's just a, it was put on by grassroots people of color organizations. APANO, Coalition of Communities of Color, NAACP, Verde, the NAYA, the Family Center, and then some environmental organizations. I guess 350 was in the beginning, and then Sierra Club. Yeah. And
how would this money be raised?
It would be raised by a, they call it a surcharge, and it, but it's basically a 1% on the sales of these huge billion-dollar national, if a retail company does $1 billion of sales nationally and $500,000 in Portland, then there's a 1% surcharge on their sales. That goes into a fund that's administered by a committee that's put together by the city, but it's there's the city council and the mayor of 9 people, I think it is, and they 2 of them have to be from east of 82nd. The whole thing has to, the priorities for both the jobs and the work done prioritizes low income and people of color communities. It's just everywhere you look at it, it's really good. Lots of job training, lot of apprentice programs are prioritized.
Is this on the ballot?
No. We have to get a jillion signatures. We have to get, I think, 45,000 signatures by the end of this month.
Ah.
We've been working on it since early in May, and we're pretty much on track. But as time goes on, the low-hanging fruit, is, you know, the people that are easy to get to have signed. now it, more and more, it's...
Huh. Okay.
More and more people are grabbing petitions and going out and doing it.
Okay. All right. Well, so, listeners, if you want to learn more, it's PortlandCleanEnergyFund.com.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Right.
Get a petition. Get going.
Yeah. I have to say, I'm an actual supporter of this, and I want to thank you, Dave, for giving us a call.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Sure.
Okay. Diane, you're next.
Hi there.
Hi.
This will take very short time. Thank you for your show. It's wonderful. I get very annoyed with Mr. Trump or Frump or whatever he's called in the White House. You know, he accuses players of not being patriotic because they're not standing.
You're talking about NFL players.
Yes, yeah. I am. And I don't watch football. I don't care about it. But I think that's disgusting. But why doesn't he pay taxes?
Trump? Trump pay taxes?
He's above the law,
okay.
You see. He has absolute power, you see.
Oh, yes. And this, why are we all standing here? What are we supposed to do?
Well, part of the problem is that we are not a nation in the tradition of frequent revolutions. We had one.
We like to pretend we are.
We like to pretend we are, but we're not. And we are a nation also founded on racism and sexism and so on. Consequently, it's very difficult to imagine us taking to the streets and having something like the French Revolution, which was not in itself all a good thing. We don't do that. We don't have that tradition. So we are not used to grabbing a stick and going into the street, although it happens occasionally, as in this recent fight in Portland. and we're not also used to the idea that we have a totally corrupt system. And yet, here it is. And it's really hard to grasp the significance of it. The majority of people, I suspect, as long as they're getting enough to eat and as long as they have a house to live in and so on, are willing to let things be without understanding the implications of it. And that's been a tradition here for a long, long time.
What a pity.
Well, what a world.
Yeah.
What a world.
Anyway, is there more?
Well, that's all. I am so... just the thought of this, what this man has done in his cohorts, people are depressed all the time now.
Yeah. Well,
And And that's really, really pretty pathetic. But thank you so much for your show. Keep up the work.
Yeah,
I know how frustrating it is for you. Okay, take care.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call.
Yeah.
Well, it's not exactly frustrating because this is the time. This is the time when every patriotic American, regardless of their left-right leanings, need to recognize the danger of this proto-fascism led by this incredibly narcissistic crazy person, and it's supported by huge monies. This is the time to rise up legitimately and make a change in America that will last. And I'm very disappointed that there aren't more people seeing that necessity. I don't know what it'll take.
Indeed. I think people are seeing that necessity, and I think that many of them, like myself, wonder exactly how that is to be done.
Well, it is difficult. You know, I am a very strong supporter of nonviolent action for two reasons.
Yes.
One is it's ethically strong. The second reason is practically strong. When you are in an apparent minority, and I'm not talking about opinion, I'm talking about action, it's a good strategy. And I think that it also never really, really caught on with the majority of people. So what needs to happen is you can't just have a riotous crowd in the street and black bloc armed fighters and so on. Those are things that can be useful, but they are not enough. There has to be a real sense of danger by the citizens of America to save the republic. And this is not left or right. This is just really common sense to save the system, however it has many faults. However, it needs, at this point, an action by everybody to save it.
Yeah. Coalescing in my brain is sort of a grand unified theory of the Trump presidency. Do you want to hear it?
I do, but I have a vision of this drip, drip, drip falling into this pool of absolute wisdom.
Well, yeah, that's exactly how my brain is.
Go ahead.
Okay. We mentioned earlier Trump's declaration that he has the absolute right to pardon himself, which is a frightening statement from an American president.
Well, I also believe he can make children by himself.
All right, I'm going to let that one go right on by.
Okay.
Okay. He's also been exercising his pardon power of late.
That's the only part of him that he exercises.
That's true. That was good. All right. There was Scooter Libby. Remember Scooter Libby?
Yay, Scooter Libby!
Yeah, who famously committed treason back under the Bush administration when he outed a covert CIA operative over the weapons of mass destruction issue. You remember that?
Yeah.
All right. His sentence was commuted by then President Bush, which is sort of an intermediate step on the way to pardon, because I guess that would have been a bridge too far to actually pardon him at the time. But that meant that he was... this charge was still on his record. He just didn't have to serve prison time. He could not practice law, so on and so forth. President Bush pardoned Libby several weeks ago. I think that was a deliberate signal.
You mean President Trump?
President Trump. Wow, see? Look, They're even starting to come together in my head. This was, I think, interpreted as a signal that if you want to behave illegally and unconstitutionally, I got your back as president.
Oh, it's a clear message.
Yeah, indeed. Just earlier this week, he pardoned a guy, a right-wing commentator named Dinesh D'Souza.
What a creep.
He is a creep who is doing jail time for illegal campaign contributions. Also a
confessed,
signal.
Confessed.
Also a signal, I think, to those people who are able to vociferously defend Trump in the media that he's got their back as well. Several months ago, he pardoned Sheriff Joe Arpaio from Arizona. Do you remember that guy?
Oh, the hyper-racist, anti-Hispanic guy
who put
prisoners into effeminate-style clothing and made them live in tents.
Right, yeah. Famous for the large-scale warehousing and torture of people of Central American extraction.
Yes.
All these pardons are sending clear messages to those people who might be hesitating to act overtly on Trump's behalf. He is saying to them, yes, act on my behalf, and I will protect you. And now he has even indicated that he is willing to protect himself from the legal consequences of his actions. So I'm saying to you that the grand unified theory of the Trump presidency is that he may not have intended to do this when he took office, but he is now viewing his office as a means to immunize himself and his family always and forever for any misdeeds they may have ever committed in their lives. And he will be able to whistle happily to the end of his days, a rich, fat, and powerful man who faces no consequences for anything.
Right.
That's what the presidency has become for him.
Well, and it's become bizarre for his family. where I don't want to. I'm going to skip the Samantha Bee issue, but you know, really, it's almost impossible to have a conversation about this administration without resorting to the most crass and ugly images.
Yeah, it's true. And it's also it's getting harder and harder to have any sort of rational debate with anybody on the conservative side of the spectrum. Why? Because of a constant series of false equivalences that go on and on and on.
Well,
for example,
and false facts.
It's perfectly equivalent for Samantha Bee to call the president's daughter a nasty name. That is absolutely morally equivalent to being an entrenched and unreconstructed racist. That's the argument coming out of the right. That is a false equivalence. That right. is one of a spectrum of false equivalences that have peppered the political debate for a long time now. You can't argue with these people anymore. They are perfectly willing to watch the country slide into fascism as long as their tribe ends up on top.
Well, I think you're right.
It is a sad state of affairs, my friend.
Well, and it's also, I mean, it's at so many levels a destruction of the rich cultures for good or for better or worse that characterize America. This is an incredible slide. And I don't think people realize not just the dangers, but the depth of this slide.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really think people have to struggle on all kinds of fronts. Yes, it's good to march in the street. Yes, if it's necessary to fight, I guess it's okay to fight. But I like nonviolence.
Oh.
Well, I like nonviolence, and I prefer it as a tactic, and I think it's better. But beyond that, everybody has got to be out there. This is not like looking for a great liberal or left-wing improvement in America. This is to hold the ground, because that's about where we're at. We have to have everybody voting. And it's particularly important for the working class and for persons of color to realize that they are deeply vested, whether they want to be or not, in this country, and they must struggle to make things get back to how it was, which is not great, but better than how it can be.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
What keeps me up at night, though, is a fear. It is a fear that a period of violence, we're going to have to experience a period of violence and turmoil in here if we're ever to right this ship. And I sincerely hope that it doesn't come to that.
Well,
but with people who are unwilling to exercise their constitutional prerogatives to remedy the situation, we're left with an increasingly limited range of options.
I see that, and I think it's a very serious issue. It is, in fact, and I want to be clear about my position, because we are not, because just on practical grounds, because we ain't the weapon holders and the murderers and so on, we must use nonviolent methods and the ballot box to reestablish at least a somewhat centrist form of government. It's not a good thing.
No.
It's not. Many of us have children. Many of us will worry about their children. This is a crisis point. I said at the beginning of the show that the murder of Bobby Kennedy was the beginning of this process. And that was a simplistic approach, because those years in the 60s were the time of assassination. But the point that is so important is that we must realize that these opponents of ours, these fascists, will resort to any means, including using power of the state illegally, including killing people. I mean, they have no limit to their immorality, because they believe themselves somehow sanctioned by the Lord.
Yeah, it's frightening.
Scary.
We've already had a civil war.
Yeah, we did one.
That's enough. That's enough. We don't need another one.
Well, I'm not sure we could. I'm not sure that would be the form it would take. But, you know, I remember
Americans fighting each other. You don't see that as a possibility at this
juncture?
You
mean like a war? A war?
Yeah, fighting each other in the streets in some way?
Well, I see that as somewhat of a parallel to what happened in Germany in the 20s and 30s. So, yeah, it's possible. I also see that people can come to their senses. I don't understand how the Republican Party, a party which I never agreed with, which was a conservative party, turned itself into a obsequious fascist party supporting a crazy person.
Yeah. And notice that we haven't even touched on the environmental apocalypse that's bearing down on all of us.
Well, that's the overwhelming wind of horror coming our way.
Yeah. I would say, you know, maybe it's a good time to move to Canada, but things ain't going to be all that great.
Well,
in Canada
we're
either.
Attacking Canada. The United States is punishing Canada.
Yep. Did you catch any of the press conference from Prime Minister Trudeau last week about
the trade thing?
Our neighbor and closest ally, the Prime Minister of Canada, came out and said that Trump's trade war was impugning the honor of Canadians who died on the beaches of Normandy and in Afghanistan and in Iraq. I have never heard a head of state speak like this before.
Well,
these are the times we're in.
Well, and you have this self
Canada,
this self same president accusing all of the people of Mexico who want to come here, some of them, of being rapists and murderers and thieves. You know,
the Prime Minister of Canada said that this was explicitly. He said that his anger and that of the Canadian people and government were not directed towards the people of the United States, but towards this administration. And he said he sees no hope of rationality prevailing within that administration anytime soon.
Well, I think he's right.
He is right. But this is Canada, Joe.
We've never
been in this place before. That's what I'm trying to get through to everybody listening to this program.
It is an unprecedented situation. I believe it is a logical slide that has been going on for some time. But this guy, Trump, jumped the queue. I mean, he's gone beyond any expectation I ever had of a move toward fascism, and he's being supported by big money. Big money.
I think we need our listeners to save us once again. Mike, good morning.
Mike, it's your chance.
Mike, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, good morning. Thank you, Kabu.
What's on your mind?
It seems to me the Supreme Court's the scariest thing for me that keeps me up at night. And it seems like people, even me, are in America, you know, I don't know about other countries, but it seems like we're quite reactionary. So we do get organized and we do get things done. We even go on strike. If it's in front of us, then it's a reactionary thing. And an immediate interface emergency. But other than that, bread and circus, so we're all fat and happy. It's frustrating, but that's what I see.
Well, I'm neither fat nor happy, I'll tell you.
I'm working big time right now every day with my own little business. But, you know, it's easy to get your mind and your heart askew and not work as hard. But in working hard, you enable yourself to do more and be more effective. But then again, you're working hard.
Yeah, that's true. But it's kind of like exercise. The more you do it, the better you are.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, in fact, I'll say this. Democracy is a participatory game. And at this point, everybody should be playing.
I like to think of it as a relay. One runner cannot win that race or even run that race effectively because it's too long. But four people handing off. So the older generation needs to hand it off to a younger generation, blah, 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 blah.
Well, and
I
think there's a huge number of younger people in this society who have the right, in mind, the right politics.
Beautiful.
But they need to be activated to actually do things, to be on the street, to ask people to vote, to put out petitions, and most importantly, in 18 and 20, to vote. And as I used to say as a joke, vote early and often.
Yeah.
Hey, okay. Thank you for the call.
That would be nice. And, I want to make it clear that I think that Antifa is absolutely in support of Vietnamese soup. Thank you.
Of what?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't catch that.
I didn't quite get that. But okay. But the thing about the
That's
strategy,
too bad, because it sounded like a parting shot.
Yeah, it did.
Okay.
But, you know, the thing about the Vietnamese soup.
Huh. I don't get it.
All right. No, anyway, I do think that there's a lot of arguments about strategy that probably at this point are pretty irrelevant. You cannot know the tipping point. The fact that there are people in the streets, however, is a historically common precedent both in American history and certainly in the history of fascism in the world. I don't think it in of itself brings about a social change that's positive. And I think it serves to justify a crackdown on whatever is left of the left or the social democratic movements and so on. So that's a very great danger. Furthermore, you know, if might is right, if you use muscle as a measure of things, well, you know, that leads only to war.
Yeah, indeed. And I think it's important in the context of what we're talking about to realize that what we're seeing here is the fruition of several decades of the conservative movement in the United States caring about nothing but power and the acquisition and the retention of power.
Well, and the big money that's behind it all.
Right, precisely. I mean, you look, for example, at the Mitch McConnell's theft of a Supreme Court nomination from a sitting president.
The famous turtle.
The famous turtle. Of all the indignities visited upon Barack Obama during his time in office, that was the worst. That one sticks in my craw, and it should stick in the craw of every American who cares a whit for the Constitution and our institutions. He stole a Supreme Court nomination from a sitting president. Now we're looking at President Trump being able to make perhaps at least two more nominations during his time in office. Anthony Kennedy is 81. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in her mid-80s. Both of those people may or may not serve. May or may not retire before Trump leaves office.
Or before they die.
But there's also a parallel effort going on right now to fast-track the appointment of conservative judges to federal courts positions all across the land.
That's right.
That's going on in parallel right now. So we're looking at delivering the power of judicial decision-making, which is, let us not forget, a co-equal power amongst the branches of government in our system.
Right.
We are on the verge of handing that power over to conservative interests in this country for the next several decades. So if we're looking for courts to be the last bulwark of our free society, we are giving that away as well.
Yeah, and one of the most interesting things that definitely will be happening, there will be a constitutional crisis around Trump, and it's going to be interesting to see if this 5-4 Supreme Court mans or persons up to, despite their political leanings, to do the right thing. It's possible, conceivable, that a better conscience will prevail. But I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm more in doubt about that than I think any time in my life.
That's scary.
Right now.
And you're such a conventional fella.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, Chris, you're up next.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Hello?
Wow, so many things. Even just since I was listening, waiting in line. The last caller, he's talking about bread and circuses. I was thinking of the video, This Is America.
Yeah, Donald Glover.
Gambino,
right.
Video.
Brilliant, brilliant piece of work.
It's brilliant. And, you know, one of the interpretations that I thought was really meaningful and prescient was, you know, that the focus in the video is on Donald Glover and a few people behind him throughout the video, but that what is actually happening in the background is this constant violence that's taking place in, mm-hmm. in so many different ways. But that that Donald Glover's shuffle and his expression and his movement and his entertainment keeps our focus while, and then we see these punctuations of extreme violence and we're caught off guard, but then and we're surprised, like, where did that come from? But throughout the video, as in America, there's a background of violence, and we have to look deeper, we have to look into the origins of the violence in this country, and that it's really founded on violence, and yet we're surprised every time there's a school shooting. We're like, oh my gosh, it happened again. But every single day there are women being killed by their significant others. That is actually the most common form of violence in this country, and it happens multiple times a day. And that isn't something that we're shocked by or surprised by. But then when we see a school shooting or a church shooting, all of a sudden we're taken aback. And I really thought that that video, for each time I've watched it, it really does that well. But it's the bread and circuses. As long as we're singing and dancing and getting money, everything's good.
Yeah, as long as nobody's hungry.
Well, yeah. But see, people are
people
hungry.
People are hungry.
They absolutely are. They're starving, and you know, that's part of the reason for some of the violence, right? Is when you don't have any other means to get what you need, you take it. But you know, Joe, you brought up that today's the assassination, the anniversary of the assassination of Robert Kennedy. It's also the anniversary of Tank Man in Tiananmen Square.
Oh, wow. And, I didn't realize.
Oh, Tank Man. I remember him.
Yeah. So recall, right, that while at the same time we might be memorializing the death of democracy, that one man stood up in the face of state terror and state violence, and that that was all it took to transform, you know, a whole bunch of people's consciousness. And I believe that what that man did that day is still having effects in China, among the mass of the people who still rise up and resist in little ways and big ways. And so democracy to me is not dead. As long as we're alive, there's always a possibility of democracy because we are the people. So I
thank you for that.
That
I really needed
that
to hear
that day. But let's also remember the Tank Man. Slide, yes, this is a huge slide, but at the same time, you know, and Chris Hedges, I think, articulated this really well in talking about this slow motion coup d'etat, uh-huh, and this slow motion capture of government by corporations over a long period of time. And I think now we're starting to see, if I could go back to the This Is America analogy, metaphor, we're now seeing these punctuated, like, what is happening? Who runs this country? But this has been going on the whole time. The ownership class has always been there. And what, you know, the seeds of this conflict are now rising up in high contrast and high relief to what we believe about ourselves as being this democratic society. But if we look back, we can see these seeds of this kind of rich ownership class that have always pulled the strings, that have always manipulated the courts, that have always done what they want regardless of the law. And I think we have to take a sober look at that and recognize that there's always been this choice and this tension between the power of the people and the power of, mm-hmm, of the elites and those with means, you know.
And let us never forget that the ownership class used to thrive by the buying and selling of human beings.
Yes, absolutely. And like, you know, as Marx that said that it was slavery and the theft of indigenous land that was the prior accumulation for what we now call capitalism. And I just read a quote at the beginning of Mario Puzo's Godfather trilogy. He quoted Balzac, who said, behind every great fortune, there lies a crime. And, you know, I think that beautifully illustrates what we're seeing now. But yeah, I think the solution is that we have to walk away. I think we have to go really deeper. And I don't know if reform is the answer, because as you guys said, our largest limit that we have to look at is climate change. And so regardless of what we do to shift our policy or our laws or how the system works or whether or not the people in the system actually follow the rules, even if the system functions well, we're going towards a cliff that is not sustainable. And so I think we have to relocalize. And I think that's where the solution is turning towards each other and away from the system that is destroying our own lives and the planet itself. I have more to say, but I love you guys. This show is awesome.
Thank you, man.
I'm so glad to hear what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep fostering these conversations. We need it.
Thank you. You know, I really needed to hear what you said, which was, we are still we the people.
Yes.
We're still free. And, you know, until that ceases to be, there's still a fighting chance.
Always a fighting chance.
Yeah.
It's never over.
You know, Gandhi, like Gandhi, what they did, he was like, you know, there. What? You said we can't have salt. Oh, okay. Well, we're just going to go get the salt real quick. Mm-hmm. And all they did was walk to the sea and take the salt. That it, you know, it wasn't anything crazy. It was really simple. They just went on a walk and they got the salt.
But they also got beaten severely.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, nonviolence, actually, if we think about it, nonviolence requires violence. You know, King never said no violence. He said we are nonviolent and we use the violence of others to highlight the moral issue.
Yes.
And so we have to examine violence. We have to look at violence and what it does. And if nonviolence isn't effective, as King said, you know, riots are the language of the unheard. And if nonviolence doesn't work, violence is what we can understand as logically following, and we might end up going, you know, the Fanon route, which is that violence is the language that people in power understand, and maybe that's the language that we have to speak.
I hate to do this. You've raised a significant and important issue, and at this point, I gotta cut you off because we're out of time.
Yeah, please do. But we gotta look at violence from whether we consider ourselves nonviolent or not. We have to understand what it is and how people use it, and whether or not it's effective.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you for the call.
Love you guys.
That was a great call. My goodness.
And we're out of time.
Yeah. Hop on YouTube and watch that video, This is America by Childish Gambino, one of the most relevant pieces of art by a commercially successful artist I've seen in a long time. Also, Google the speech that Robert Kennedy made the night that Martin Luther King was assassinated. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Right. And remember my argument that 68 was the year that democracy began to die.
All right, thank you all for tuning in. There's a lot to take in today, a lot to really bring you down, but I'm here to tell you it ain't over yet. And I think we're going to talk in the ensuing weeks about ways that we can push back against all this. So keep on keeping on. Fires of the homeless from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, next on Alternative Radio, journalist and activist Arun Gupta discusses policing, property, and evangelism. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, stage and studio talks with performing, literary, and media artists from the Northwest. At 11:30, Art Focus welcomes Augen Gallery's Bob Koch to discuss the detailed artwork of Indian painter Ajay Garg. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. Keep informed and get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. The time now is 9 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring an archive contractor for 40 hours a week for $20 an hour. This is a contract position that will last from July through December of 2018. The archive contractor will steward the KBOO archival assets in all forms. They will work with historical KBOO content in many audio formats, as well as the Resource Space Archival Database, documents of KBOO history, and KBOO staff and volunteers. Please send in a resume, cover letter, and answer the question, why is KBOO important? To Dell at KBOO.org.